on great radio stations all across America. It's The National Defense with Randy Miller and Jerry Newberry.
The National Defense is made possible by Ford. Go further. By The Home Depot. More saving, more doing. And by Subway. We sell delicious sandwiches that you will like, and you should get one. Subway. So much sandwich.
This is The National Defense, Randy Miller and Jerry Newberry. And Jerry, as always, our dedication.
Hey, this show's for you, the men and women serving in our military. It's for the millions of veterans out there, and it's for all their families. We're here for you. We love you. God bless you.
The show's going to the dogs, again, in a good way. And we talk about this a lot. Warrior Canines. Now, there's a group called Warrior Canine Connection, and Rick Yaunt is leading the charge on that, and he's on with us right now. Rick, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. I'm doing very well.
The show's going to the dogs, again, in a good way. And we talk about this a lot. Warrior Canines. Now, there's a group called Warrior Canine Connection, and Rick Yaunt is leading the charge on that, and he's on with us right now. Rick, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. I'm doing very well. Glad to be
Listen,
with you.
You guys are doing some great work over there, Rick. And, you know, we've had a lot of stories about canine companions, and it's always, not like sometimes, it's always a great story because it just makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, I agree. I agree. It makes a lot of sense. We've been doing it for about 30,000 years. Yeah. 30,000 years.
I was just going to say, so you pioneered the first therapeutic service dog training program at the VA in Palo Alto, right?
Yeah, I conjured this up, the idea, about 12 years ago, and then piloted in 2008 at the trauma recovery program in Menlo Park.
Now, are you a veteran yourself?
I'm not. I'm actually 30-plus year social worker.
Okay. Well, then how did you come to that realization that that would make a great partnership between dogs and veterans?
You know, I was gifted a gold retriever puppy for Christmas, which you're not supposed to do, and I was coerced through the eyes of a gold retriever puppy. He one day convinced me he was going to die if I didn't take him to work.
Yeah.
And I had no plan whatsoever, but I was working with severely abused and neglected children in foster care. Hmm. And I had this puppy that that hitched a ride and had no plan. And that day I took him to work. I really just saw immediately how this gold retriever could help mitigate the trauma these kids were going through in these horrible circumstances.
Yeah, and I mean, what kid, couldn't connect with a dog, right? And that seems easy to look back and think about that now, but boy, what a great step that was. And so the Warrior Canine Connection, you guys help all of these different military people with this therapeutic mission of learning how to train service dogs for their fellow veterans. And talk about that a little bit, if you will, Rick, because through that, just the training of these dogs, what do veterans get out of that?
Yeah, and really, this whole program has two core powers at work here, that healing power of the human-animal bond just being, in the company of these sweet gold retrievers and labs. And then you couple that with that core ethos, that warrior ethos, that core value of taking care of your brothers and sisters in arms.
Right.
And so that's what really, that's how we hook them. Say, hey, while you're here in the hospital, there's vets waiting for years to get quality dogs that need trained, and we could use your help, and we'll teach you how to do it. And when they get involved in learning to train these mobility service dogs, they realize this is not your average dog training. You have to be very precise in your timing, and you have to get the perfect tone when you're giving a command. You have to sound assertive but not aggressive. It's like Arnold Schwarzenegger when you say down. And then when the dog does the behavior you want, you have to reinforce it. And to reinforce behaviors in dogs, you can't sound like Arnold Schwarzenegger. You have to sound more like Richard Simmons.
That's right.
The process of, hey, this no-fail mission to take care of your fellow vet to train this dog requires that you're going to have to take this dog out in public and teach the dog that, hey, crowds are good. And dumpster door slamming, you might get a treat for that. And then, you're going to have to, you're going to have to sound really positive and happy, or at least fake sounding happy
right,
for the sake of the dog training, for the sake of the veteran who needs the dog training.
And Rick, you know, think about, you know, we talk about it on the show all the time about one way to combat PTSD and depression is to give a veteran a mission and a purpose. And you're doing that with every one of these veterans. And just like you said, it's got to be precise. It's not your average dog training where, you know, sit down and beg and this kind of thing. I mean, these dogs have to be trained on a precision level. But here's my thing. If I'm training this dog and I'm forming a bond with this dog, don't take my dog.
Well, you know, it's a good question. I get posed quite a bit. And we actually have used that aspect because you do have to fall in love. You have to have a relationship right. with the dog. We're constantly reminding them, you're training this dog for another vet. And, you know, but you got to put your heart into it and give a piece of your heart
right.
to this dog and then let that go. And so many of the veterans we work with have experienced, I mean, just incredible loss, more than we can even comprehend.
Sure.
But this loss is associated with a very positive, and the fact right. that this loss is going to help another vet makes this intervention perfect for addressing survivor's guilt. And we've seen that over and over again, that this is it's a way of rewiring how you process loss. And we use it to really, bring up that subject in,
right.
in trauma groups and for folks who, they won't talk about their experience, they won't talk about their loss, they're really, really reluctant to engage in that therapy, that you start talking about, hey, you're going to be giving this dog, to another trainer, another vet that's going to receive the dog, and how's that feel for you? And, it's a natural way to approach that subject,
wow.
which can then be, grow to a much larger scale.
And do some of the veterans that train the dogs, do they get to see where the dogs go and maybe visit the dog and the veteran, or how does that work?
Absolutely. You know, with our volunteers and trainers, we invite them to come to our graduations and actually hand over the dog whenever possible to the recipient. And, it's all about relationships, right? And this is a way to really build meaningful relationships. And it's really, all graduations, we're having one this Saturday, actually, when 19 dogs are going to be up on the stage graduating. And we'll have veteran trainers. We even name our dogs after service members, many who are killed in action. So we'll have Gold Star families participating and somebody handing over the leash as well. You know, we are mastering getting every therapeutic drop out of every dog that we have.
I was just going to say, I mean, it just seems like every little aspect of this, because here's another thing that you're doing here is you're connecting one veteran to another veteran. And I mean, that's important.
Absolutely. It's really important. You know, isolation is killing so many of our veterans.
Right.
And anything we can do to make it very difficult for them to isolate and, bunker down in their own apartments or houses. And one thing I can tell you for sure is that when you take one of these beautiful golden giraffes out in the community, in the public, there is a 0% chance that you can actually isolate, because that dog will just
right.
motivate so many
right.
strangers to come up and interact with you through the dog. And,
that's a great,
that's a powerful tool in itself.
That's a great point. And so now, since the inception of the Warrior Canine Connection, you guys have placed more than, how many, 30 service dogs?
We're getting up about 50 now, yeah.
Okay. And But you say 50 dogs, but the lives that you've impacted are in the thousands because of that.
Yeah, the beautiful thing is this model was not just one dog helping one veteran.
Right.
It's one dog helping many, many veterans over, we don't wait until the dog is placed for a dog to help one veteran. We start as soon as the puppies are, soon after they're born, a couple weeks old, we'll have service members coming out and helping to socialize them, being involved in their training. And we've had well over 60 veterans or service members involved in the training of one dog, even before that dog is graduated.
Wow. And is it always Goldens and Labs?
Yeah, we have our own breeding program. We breed for ultimately healthy and the temperament that we're looking for this kind of work.
Rick Yaunt is the guy with the Warrior Canine Connection. We're going to take a quick break. We'll talk more on the National Defense. Welcome back to the National Defense. It's Randy Miller, and we're talking about dogs in a good way. Dogs are great, especially around veterans. The Warrior Canine Connection is getting it done, and Rick Yaunt is our guest. Where do you get the dogs, Rick?
We have our own breeding program.
Oh, wow.
And we want to have, the dog is such a key variable. We want to have control over everything we can when it comes to the dog, all of their experiences, all of their socialization and exposure and training. So, and we want to look back, 10 generations back to ensure as much as we can that they're going to be living long, healthy lives.
So this is kind of the pit bull and parole of the veteran community. Or at least the same kind of idea.
I didn't think about that one for a while.
So you guys have 5 training locations, right?
Correct. Yeah, we have a program. I originally started this at the VA at Menlo Park, our headquarters here in Boyd's, Maryland, which is not far from D.C. We have programming down at Fort Belvoir in Virginia. And we have 2 office sites at Walter Reed, one at the National Trauma Center of Excellence and the transition unit.
What a cool idea and helping so many veterans. How can people find out more about the Warrior Canine Connection?
Well, we have a website, warriorcanineconnection.org, all spelled out. And folks can learn, how to get involved, volunteering, donating, sharing their expertise, spreading the word. And we also have a social media, a Facebook presence, the Warrior Canine Connection, that you can see the latest puppies that are being born and when they're named after service members.
I wanted to ask you about that, too, because you guys, you did a live puppy cam live stream, right?
Oh, yeah, the puppy cam is, there should be a warning with it. It can be addictive.
Yeah, I'll bet. I'll bet.
Yeah, we started this, we were asked to put this live puppy cam in among the group of explore.org. They have all these cameras around the world, grizzly bears, and you name it. Yeah, you can see sharks, I guess, now too. But they wanted to have a camera on our puppies, and it truly went viral. We had like 5.5 billion views the first year.
Wow.
On this puppy cam. And it's been really interesting to see how therapeutic that has become in a virtual way. People commenting all the time how, it's stressful at work, and, when they're having a bad day, they turn on the puppy cam and just completely, helps their perspective.
What a great program. The Warrior Canine Connection, Rick Yaunt started it. He founded it. He's the man. And we're going to put all the links on our website. Rick, thank you so much for what you're doing for veterans, and thanks for the time today.
Oh, thank you so much, and thanks for help spreading the word. We want to grow this to reach more veterans, and I think we really solidly believe we're on to something here.
Absolutely.
It's not pharmaceutical. It's a lot more natural, and it's been proven for about 30,000 years that dogs are good for us. So we're older than acupuncture.
So, I mean, well said. Absolutely, Rick. Thank you so much. We'll be right back here on the National Defense.
The National Defense is made possible by ADT Security. For over 140 years, your first line of defense. And by Hilton Hotels. With over 10,000 veterans and military spouses hired in the last 3 years, Hilton offers a world of opportunity. Visit jobs.hilton.com/military.
Welcome back to National Defense. It's Randy Miller, Jerry Newberry. Jerry Newberry is on assignment this week, and we're fighting a good fight here in the studio with our good friend, actor extraordinaire. This man does so much for veterans, John Amos. You know his work from Roots. You know his work from Good Times. He's done he does some exceptional stuff with the USO. John, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for the opportunity, gentlemen, to speak on behalf of our veterans. Thank you so much.
Well, you've spoken on behalf of our veterans many, many times. In fact, you know, one of the things that I saw you at recently was at the big celebration at Union Station in Kansas City, and you had a you're a big part of the program there for veterans. And what can you kind of tell us what your connection is to veterans and what your interest is in these men and women that serve our country?
Absolutely. Well, on a very personal level, my father, John Amos Sr., was a veteran in World War II, and he always honored his commitment to attend as many veteran celebrations or veteran acknowledgments as possible. So I'm just pretty much carrying on. And on my own personal military record, if you could call it that, I joined the New Jersey State National Guard as a youngster, and at the age of, well, a very young age, because I'd fudged my age just a little bit. I was it's my age. And
have you ever done anything by the book, John?
Which book are we talking about?
Exactly.
But the bottom line is, when my mother found out that I could go away for 2 weeks in the summer to summer camp, and that they would feed me all I wanted, she said, by all means, where do I sign?
Man, I tell you, and just on a note on that, you know, and that used to be the way that was, right? The National Guard, the reserves, and anymore, there is none of that. Everything is active duty now. You know, you talk to some reservists who are on their fourth and fifth deployment. I mean, anymore, that is a full-time job.
No doubt. My own outfit, I was with the 50th Armored Division of the New Jersey State National Guard, which has now been, the name has been changed to the 50th Armored Battalion. I was present along with the governor of the then governor of the state, Corzo, and a number of other military dignitaries when that unit was deployed to Afghanistan several years ago.
Wow.
So you're absolutely right. There is no more just, you know, weekend warriors.
Right.
Once you take the vow and you sign up, you're in, man.
That's it, you know, and that's why it makes it so much more important now. We talk about this on the show all the time because the reservists used to be the ones that people said, oh, they'll get their job back. They'll be fine. They're, you know, no problem with employment. Well, that's become the number one unemployed person in the United States of America. And
yeah,
that's just a shame.
That's unacceptable.
It is unacceptable.
No doubt. I wish I watched, like so many millions of other Americans, watched the debates the other night. I wish that more attention and more questions had been focused specifically to each candidate as to what their plans were to rectify the grievances justifiable of the American veterans. A lot more attention should have been paid to that, I felt.
I totally agree. And, you know, it's a kind of a sad state of affairs that's always the last question to be asked when that should be the first. I mean, there are some senators and some congressmen that are out there fighting on a daily basis. And the VFW has legislators that are on Capitol Hill every day. But, you know, for the less than 1% of the population that serve, that's about the same amount of people that care about those issues. And so that's a tough road to hoe for those people.
Yes, it is. So they need all the support that all of our legislators can give them, and it can't start soon enough.
Well, so, John, now you run how many USO missions have you had? I know you've been with the USO on several trips, right?
Yes, several. In fact, one of them was a trip to what we call Stansville. That was Kyrgyzstan, Afghanistan, and Uzbekistan, and a whole bunch of other stands that I still don't understand.
There's a lot of stands over there.
A lot of stands over there. But it was the most fascinating thing about that trip was I'm in Kyrgyzstan, and a young soldier comes up to me, and he says, "You're John Amos, aren't you?" I said, "Yes, sir." He says, "Are you from Califon, New Jersey?" And I said, "Well, that's where I live." And he said, "Well, you go into my grandfather's store all the time." I couldn't believe it, man. I mean, it was like something out of a Hollywood movie. Here's this kid from millions of miles, well, not millions of miles, but certainly hundreds of thousands of miles or thousands of miles away from home, and we meet in the most godforsaken place in the world.
Right.
It was just an amazing piece of, what would you call it?
Serendipity
or something.
Well, and you know what's amazing, John, and I've heard this story from from other people who have visited there. It's such a small world. And, you know, you don't realize that until you go that far and meet somebody like that, like you say, from your own town. But do you get a sense of when you travel with the USO or any group and you meet these military folks, how much it means to them that not only who you are, but that you've taken the time and the effort to come and visit them? That just means so much.
Well, they appreciate it ever so much. And at one base in particular, it coincided with my then birthday, and they surprised the heck out of me. They took me into a conference room. I thought I was going to be sitting in on some top secret strategy meeting. And they had a birthday cake for me. I tell you, I didn't want to wimp up on those guys, but I was moved to the point of tears.
Oh, man.
I tell you, it was absolutely fantastic feeling to see these soldiers get together and recognize that it was my birthday and to honor me with a cake.
That's so cool.
And I've got pictures. Oh, I've got hundreds of photographs with the bomber crews, and I even got to do something that they used to do in the Second World War, which was to send a expletive-ridden quotation to whoever was going to be recipient of the bombs that day. Take one of these in the morning and call me tomorrow.
Yeah, right. You got to craft that message, huh?
Yeah, I got to send that. So it was a good feeling, man.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Well, you know, I'm looking down the IMDb here, and, I mean, you've been associated with a lot of projects that had some military leanings, huh?
Oh, no doubt. And then, of course, on the West Wing to play.
Yeah.
To portray the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff for a guy that never made it past Tenderfoot and Boy Scouts, I did pretty well.
Yeah, but you know what, John? I mean, that not only speaks to your acting, but it speaks to your presence. You know, I can see you walking into a group of Marines or sailor or whatever it is, and them looking at you like, we will do anything you tell us, Mr. I mean, you just have that presence about you.
Well, I thank you so much. You talk about presence. I had the privilege when I was working on the West Wing to be invited to meet then Secretary of State Colin Powell.
Oh, wow.
He had retired as the Joint Chiefs. So my wife and I were sitting outside his office waiting for our appointment. And he comes strolling through the office and looks at me and says, Percy Fitzwallace. What kind of name is that for a brother?
A brother.
And totally disarmed me, broke me up. We started laughing. So we go into his office. We sit down, and he says, excuse me a minute, John. I want to call my wife, Alma. He calls his wife, and he says, Alma, you'll never believe who I'm sitting in my office with.
Wow.
I looked at my wife, and I said, she'll never believe who he's sitting with.
Yeah, right. My gosh.
I looked up at the heavens, and I said, Ma, look at this. Would you believe this?
Yeah. Oh, man. That's fantastic.
It's a great feeling. And I can understand why his troops bore such an allegiance to him. You talk about presence. If he'd have said, John, we need you to re-up, I'd have signed the paper right.
Well, I mean, not just re-up, but can you imagine Colin Powell telling you that when you're getting ready to leave the military, are you sure you want to do that, son? No, I'm not. I've thought it over. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to stay.
Exactly. He'd have pulled you off the fence the right way.
That's right. Well, and how many people... what do people recognize you most from when you're out in the public or when you're visiting the military? Have you ever had a chance to go to Walter Reed, by the way?
Yes, I did. I was going to relate that experience. I went to Walter Reed a number of times before they moved the facility to Bethesda, Maryland, I believe.
Sure.
And it was an eye-opening experience to see the rehabilitation facilities they had there for those soldiers and those warriors, male and female, who had lost a limb.
Yep.
Particularly a lower limb, a leg, and to see them on the therapy program and the way these guys cheer each other on. They don't want any pity parties.
No, oh no.
Listening. That's the last thing they want. What they want is to be brought back into society, given a meaningful role, and understand that just because they've lost a limb, they haven't lost their hearts, and they haven't lost their devotion to this country. And they need that support. So if it takes a few minutes out of your day to just write a postcard, to the nearest veterans organization near you, the nearest VFW, and just say thank you for your service. God bless you. We appreciate you. It would be tremendously appreciated, and it wouldn't take that much time, folks. It won't cost you a dime.
What a great message. And that is so true, John. We're talking to John Amos. It's so true that when they get any kind of recognition, whether no matter how small, how large, they appreciate it so much. And you're so right about the Warriors. I remember we did a show from the Bataan Death March Memorial Run, which they do in New Mexico. So we're down there doing the show, and there are a group of 11 Bataan survivors that are there. And these men are in their 90s. And the thing that brought tears to your eyes is when they played the national anthem, every one of these men very painfully stood up and saluted. And
right.
I mean, the stories they told, but they had a group of wounded warriors there, and we didn't know where they were. We went into a luncheon, and you get these strapping young guys that are ready to take on this 32-mile march and the packs on their back and everything. And then you notice they're missing a limb or they're missing, you know, but they're ready to go. And they did.
Right.
Wow. I mean,
that's a testimony to their devotion and their fortitude.
Yep. It really is, and their mental outlook. You know, we just had somebody on the show talking about PTSD, and it's such a big part of conflict, and it's something that everybody has to come to terms with and deal with, and hopefully there will be some treatments that are available. But you know, the things that you're talking about, John, you know, a little recognition, a little appreciation. A letter or a card, and just to say hello, and the things that you're doing, that goes so far in overcoming things like that and getting back into society.
No doubt, and it gives you a greater appreciation of the sacrifices that these young men and women, and in most cases now, the older generation of veterans who survived, it's only the right thing to do to acknowledge them, because we take for granted so many freedoms we have in this country.
Yeah.
I think you really have to live overseas, or at least visit overseas, some of these third world situations where they have openly oppressive governments, and to say some of the things that we say openly would end in incarceration or worse. I mean, that, like the debate that we all took so much for granted the other night, the presidential debate. Those issues and that type of a thing could never be discussed in some countries without fear of imprisonment.
Oh, my gosh. I know. I mean, you know, it's just that's the reason that that we should be appreciative, and that we should be taking care of these people. So
no doubt.
Did you ever get a chance to travel with Bob Hope?
No, I'm afraid that was Mr. Hope's USO tours preceded my activism.
Talking to John Amos. I'd like to take a quick break. We'll be right back here on the National Defense. Welcome back to National Defense. It's Randy Miller and Jerry Newberry. Jerry Newberry is on assignment. Hey, John, you know, where do you find that document? I want to see that documentary.
Well, I will send you a copy of it.
I would absolutely. I'd love to show that. That sounds great.
Please. Please. And
wow.
Most recently, I've been approached by a gentleman. He is well into his 90s. I think he's 92. He was a Colonel Dotson. Colonel Dotson is one of the surviving members, and in fact, the last surviving member of the psychiatric corps, whose job it was to give psychiatric treatment to those soldiers of color and the Second World War, and what incredible stories
wow.
He must tell. So I'm looking forward to meeting this gentleman. He's sending me some materials on his history and that of his outfit so that I can get a better grasp as to whether or not it would be substantial for a documentary on him.
You know, that's the kind of thing, I mean, you know, a lot of people talk about doing great things for the troops and supporting the troops. And this, I mean, to make a documentary and to go that deep into something that you feel very strongly that should be viewed, That's a strong statement, and I appreciate you so much for that. That had to be a cool thing working with your son, too.
Oh, it was great. Casey's an award-winning filmmaker, and we worked together on a number of projects, but this one was so close to both our hearts. We saw it through, and we did so. I might add this. We did so without any hopes of generating any inordinate amount of funds or anything. In fact, my son and I paid for the documentary out of our own pockets.
Oh, wow.
We didn't ask for it, nor did we receive any government or corporate help to do the documentary. If I go forward in the future with this effort, I certainly have gotten the attention and I hope the support of a number of corporations and private entities that would be supportive of such a documentary being done full-blown.
Well, yeah, because like you say, I mean, especially African-Americans and besides the Tuskegee Airmen, and you just don't hear a lot about that part of our history. And anymore, to be honest with you, you go in any school in the United States, they're not talking about the Civil War. They're not talking about the Desert Storm. You don't get any of those kind of things in United States schools, and that's really a shame. We talk about that on the show all the time.
Yeah, there's no explanation for it, or there's no justifiable explanation,
no.
As far as I'm concerned.
No, I mean, and so when we have somebody, that's on that's so fascinated and so invested in telling those stories, it's so great to hear. So now what are you doing now, John? What's next up for John Amos?
Well, I continue to work on that documentary that I spoke of regarding the psychiatric evaluation of those troops that had been traumatized in whatever conflict they served in. So I'll continue with that. And I'll continue being supportive of veterans in my area. I ride a motorcycle, or I did until until old age said, "Hey,
John, you're the man." Thank you so much for being on. I promise we won't interview you again for a couple days.
Hey, you take your time. I'll be available when you guys need me.
Hey, listen, we're still looking for you in Kansas. And by the way, I don't know if you knew this or not, but Kansas City, Missouri is the national headquarters for the VFW.
I was not aware of that, so I've got to do a special shout-out to all the VFW veterans in Kansas City. Carry on, guys, and go Chiefs.
Thank you, John. Have a great day.
Thank you, gentlemen. You too.
We'll be right back here on the National Defense.
Good Times is recorded on tape before a live audience.
Ain't we lucky we got 'em? Good Times.
This is the National Defense.